Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. I'm Peter Wallace, and today we're honored to have with us the Right Reverend Charles F. Duvall, the second bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of the Central Gulf Coast, now retired. Bishop, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First of all, if you would, tell us about that diocese.
Well, the Diocese of the Central Gulf Coast is a relatively new diocese in the Episcopal Church, put together from the southern third of the state of Alabama and the northwest portion of the state of Florida, unique in our church in that approximately 50% of the diocese is in one state and 50% in the other. Part of our name, I think, came from the fact that we have the part of Florida that's in central time zone, and the state of Alabama is also in central time zone. So we are the Central Gulf Coast, not the part of Florida Gulf Coast that's in eastern time zone.
Mm-hmm.
Made for an interesting time down there, and I had to learn when I crossed the timeline that either I was in fast time or slow time.
Why was that diocese created?
It was created to give a sense of a connection with the bishop and the rest of the diocese. If you're in Pensacola, Florida, for instance, and your diocesan office is in Jacksonville and the bishop is there, that's 6.5 hours away on interstates.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, it was even further away. Same thing was true in terms of Mobile, Alabama, and southern Alabama. It was a long way away from Birmingham. And so these two places, Mobile and Pensacola, so distant from their bishop and leadership, wanted to get together. They're only 60 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it has worked very well.
Now, you mentioned you served as a parish priest for 20 years and then as a bishop for 20 more years. How would you describe the work of an Episcopal bishop?
Well, when I was first elected bishop, and that's how you become a bishop in the Episcopal Church, you get elected, I thought that it would be like being in a very large congregation. And then I discovered after I became the bishop that it was quite different than that, in that you're constantly on the road going to another congregation, visiting, preaching, confirming, teaching, that sort of thing, so that you never are able to establish the kind of intimate relationship that you have with people in a local congregation where you're with them week after week, Sunday after Sunday. It's a larger relationship, but it's a not so deep a relationship. And in fact, it sometimes gets lonely. And unless you have friends either on your staff or in your personal life, it can be a very lonely job.
How do you address your own personal need for that kind of fellowship beyond those circles of friends and staff? Are there other ways that you can address that?
Well, I have found over these last 20 years when I was the bishop that old friends or friends of long standing, or might be a better description, are more and more important in my life because I see people in snatches. And if I have to spend time building a relationship, I don't have time to do that. But old friends, you just pick up and you enjoy that snatch that you have with them, that little bit of time, and that's very affirming and delightful and sustaining.
Well, I want to ask you some questions about your preaching and your storytelling. I know that our listeners have no doubt by now realize that you have one of the most beautiful accents that we've heard on the program probably in some time, but you also have impeccable diction. People have pointed that out to you. How did you develop such a unique speaking voice?
Well, my pronunciation of English words and my drawl comes from that perfect English that they speak in South Carolina. And not everybody speaks that way, but they wish they did. My diction and ability to speak in a way that can be heard easily comes from the experience of being in a military school and learning to speak over a microphone, in fact, over a loud speaker system at a parade ground. And you have to be very careful to say your words so that it comes out reverberating over the parade mm-hmm. ground in a way that can be heard. It was good experience for me. I know how to throw my voice, as it were, or to broadcast my voice so that what I'm saying can be heard.
Well, what would you say is your philosophy of preaching? Do you have something that you keep in mind when you approach the preaching task?
Yes, I do. I feel like once the scripture has been read in a service, that it's the task of the preacher not only to make sure that what was read is clear in terms of what was happening in that particular situation, but that its application to our lives today is worked with, struggled with, dealt with, so that I ask myself the question, if this is true about Jesus, if we're reading the gospel, then what does that have to do with us? And can I say that in such a way that the people not only know it, but know my excitement about it and can get excited with me about it?
Well, one of the ways that you have done that in your preaching so effectively is the way you communicate the gospel using stories, a storytelling approach. And I'd like to know about the creative process of storytelling. How do you start with the source material from the scripture? How do you build it? How do you go through that process?
Well, when I'm actually telling a story or retelling the biblical story using my imagination to fill in the silences between the verses, I ask myself, what would I like to know about that incident mm-hmm. or that conversation between two biblical characters that's not given to me in the written scripture? And having asked that question, then I began to think, well, I'd love to know this or that, and what in my imagination would fit that would make sense of this incident. It also helped me, I'll have to admit, to visit Palestine, Israel, the Holy Land, with some frequency when I was on the board of the St. George's College in Jerusalem. Seeing the actual places gave me a sense of place that helped a lot. The other thing is that if you're using a story that someone else has developed, written or told, and you heard them tell it or you read what they had written, it's very important, number one, that you give credit for where that story came from. It's not yours. Mm-hmm. You're borrowing it, as it were. And number two, that you tell it in such a way that it fits the situation. A story is so powerful that if you tell the wrong story in a sermon, the story will wipe out the sermon, and that's all they'll mm-hmm. remember. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very careful about which stories you tell and make sure that they supplement the sermon rather than overcome it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned borrowing other stories, and you did that in your sermon with the rabbi's gift that you adapted. But how do you find stories like that that you can make your own?
Well, I read a lot of things, particularly books of collections of inspirational stories and that sort of thing. That particular story I got out of a collection of stories called The World of Stories by a Roman Catholic writer, William J. Bausch, and it's a great resource book. My wife also finds that when we go in bookstores, if she goes to the children's books, she often finds stories in children's books that she brings to me, and she says, I think you could tell this story. And I do from time to time. Tell stories out of children's books because all of us are children when we are listening to a story. That there is no age limit to delight in storytelling.
Well, that's indeed true. And if any of our listeners are interested in hearing how a master does tell stories, we have available your CD collections, the title of which is
Biblical Stories Retold to Warm the Heart and Tickle the Ear.
Right. And if anyone is interested, you can visit our website, the resource store at dayone.net, or give us a call. I'm wondering, too, Bishop, if you believe there is any message or messages that people today need to hear more from their pulpits.
Gee, that's a tough question. Well, one of the things that I think is true of our modern society is that not only is the society becoming more and more openly secular, that is, not influenced by religious thought and experience, but the society is becoming more and more individualistic. The sense of the common good, the sense of belonging to a community. I grew up in a small town in South Carolina where I not only was kin to a lot of people and therefore had a large extended family, but the town was small enough I knew surely 60 or 70% of the people in that community. Mm-hmm. We had a sense of being a group, a community, and that was a valuable experience, but so many of our people today live in large, faceless metropolitan areas. They know the people at work. They may or may not know the people in their neighborhood, but they're just multitudes of people around them that they have no connection with, don't know, maybe don't even care to know. So it seems to me that one of the things that the church, both in its experience of being a part of a church, and in the experience of hearing the gospel in a sermon, the church can proclaim in experience and in word an opportunity for community, for belonging to one another, for belonging to something beyond myself. And that's a real need in our world.
Absolutely. Well, Bishop Charles Duvall, thank you so much for visiting with us.
Again, it's my pleasure, and I thank you for the opportunity to preach on Day One. Thank you.
Thank you.